The Millennial Express, ploughing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2023. I'm now here with No Chance. Now, I should have had No Chance on Millennial ages ago. And I'm sorry that I didn't. I don't really know why. But either way, I made an effort this year to have several people on that I really should have had on before. And No Chance is one of them. He's a Scottish commentator. I saw him on Twitter. I think you also had a YouTube channel, or still do have a YouTube channel, but I see you on Twitter nowadays. I'm not on YouTube anymore, so I don't really see anything that goes on there. But No Chance, welcome to Millennial.
Thanks for the invite, mate. Yeah, thankfully I've still got a YouTube channel. Don't know how I've managed. I always blame the accent, I think. I have a stronger accent, the algorithm, the AI's not quite caught up. I'm glad you're back on Twitter. A lot of people were reinstated, unfortunately. Some were reinstated and banned again, which I think was there was a list of people sent, and I think you managed to dodge a bullet there. But yeah, I'm on Twitter and YouTube.
Excellent. Those will be linked below. So would you like to introduce yourself for the audience, just so that people have some idea of your background and your concerns?
Yeah, of course. I'm a Scottish lad, Glasgow boy originally, family man. Funnily enough, I was listening to, I think it was yourself and David Clowes, it may have been, where you shared your London story, which was your political awakening. Was that with David?
I think it might have been.
Except I can add a similar story. I got interested in politics probably around about 2012, 2013. I'm only 32. But interested in politics, was pro-independence at the time, purely from a cut out the bureaucracy, kind of smaller government stuff. I was pro-Brexit as well. So I'm in that weird place in Scotland where you are for both. It's usually one or the other. But marking a political awakening or ethnic awakening was when I was working in London. And, that was probably 2016, maybe. I think I'm getting that right. But, yeah, arrived in London, assuming it would be all Royals and English people, and I was mistaken. Also, there was a very distinct smell, and there was signs in foreign languages.
Smell of diversity, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, wasn't quite curries, unfortunately. I don't like a smell of a curry, but no. But it was very overwhelming, and at that point, I kind of realised that I was never like pro immigration or pro open borders, but it kind of made my more anti-immigration stance a lot more prominent, you would say, in politics. But I don't think it's a selfish thing, but my thought was, I don't want my country turning into this. True diversity, as people say, is going from city to city, country to country, and experiencing that country You don't want to go to Glasgow and it's just like London, and go to Paris and it's just like London. You know, it's a melting pot is not what we're told it is. It's not what's on the tin, you could say. But yeah, my kind of ethnic or racial awakening was that trip to London. That was a standout.
I've remembered it was with Gavin Bobby that I talked about my own experience of this. That happened in 2002.
So it was, yeah, you're right. Yeah,
so that was about, I've told my own story countless times, so I don't want to go into it here. So you were, in your mid-20s when that happened. Did you say that you'd been pro-Scottish independence prior to that?
Yeah, I voted for independence and for Brexit. Right. I think if there was a vote today, because at the time you were sold a fantasy, it was standing your own 2 feet. It was basically Braveheart nationalism is what it's been coined as, like freedom for Scotland kind of thing. Whereas now you're claiming you're independent and you want to leave a small union to join a bigger union, more bureaucracy, more red lines. You know, it's, and also there's the mass immigration stance that our government has, where SNP politicians have been as blatant as, if you exist in Scotland for even an hour, you're just as Scottish as everyone else. There's Glasgow politicians that actually call refugees, which they aren't refugees, we know that, but they call them refugees. Like,
oh my God.
Cringe. So I would not vote for that form of independence ever.
I should just say, for, because people won't understand that, someone from Glasgow is called a Glaswegian, and a colloquial shortening of that is a Weegee. So you'll say he's a Weegee. So what they're doing there is using Scottish slang to embrace refugees by calling them refugees. It's so insidious and disgusting, because, and I've seen this before, I can't think of examples now, but I've seen it before, where they'll use a cutesy Scottish-ism to embrace diversity and globalism. And, of course, Scottish people, I know exactly how that will land with most, like with your average Scottish person. They'll think, that they'll chuckle, oh, that's nice. And they won't realise that what's happening is that their country is being transformed out of recognition around them, while they're befuddled by this cutesy little play on words.
I noticed the refugee language was pushed a lot more after the stabbing in the hotel in the Glasgow city centre. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, was that when it was a guy who was pissed off because the food they were constantly serving the same food?
Yeah, he got served macaroni one too many times, and apparently the neighbours were a bit noisy that he was staying next to. So he went on a stabbing spree. And instead of the Scottish government or these kind of refugees or welcome groups looking at this and going, maybe there is too much of a cultural divide here that this isn't going to work, they then started pushing for more special treatment for these people. You know, like more money, different food options, maybe.
The answer is always more. The solution is always more. And there's no conception. I mean, we saw a similar thing during COVID, where the answer is always more lockdown, more vaccine, more social distancing. There's no question of, do we actually need this at all? Is this entire thing wrong-headed? And likewise with mass immigration, well, if there are problems with social cohesion, then the answer is to bring in even more diversity, to bring in even more immigrants from even farther afield. I mean, it's insane. It actually is the definition of insanity.
Well, in Scotland, I know that we mentioned this before we went live, there's been a lot of focus, which I think quite rightly, on what's going on in Ireland, whether it be the government pushing, say, hate speech laws or refugees getting the right to vote. Refugees already have the right to vote in Scotland. That exists. So these people putting a false asylum claim, and then they get to vote in our elections. They also get to stand for office. We had our first refugee elected at one, I think it was two years ago, maybe.
I remember, and also the 16-year-olds are allowed to vote.
Yeah, and the way you can register at 14, so they've got you in the system, and then, yeah, you can vote at 16.
That's incredible. I remember when this was brought in, and this is a good example of how a country can be changed piecemeal and in an insidious fashion. They said, with the Scottish independence referendum, which was 2014, I think it was, yeah, it was the end of September 2014, they said, well, we've got to let 16-year-olds vote in this because it's the future of Scotland, and that affects them, the young, more than it affects the old, because they're not going to live as long. So obviously we should let the as young as possible people vote, so that, because it affects even more of their future. So by that logic, you should let 2-year-olds vote, because it's obviously going to affect even more of their future than the 16-year-olds. But I mean, it's absurd. It's a stupid thing. It's a stupid argument. And of course, once it was, and they said it's specifically for the referendum. It's not for general elections. And they did this with other things as well. I remember when gay marriage, when civil partnerships were brought in, they said, this isn't a route to gay marriage. It's just, it says it's an alternative to marriage. And then 10 years later, of course, the next logical step is, well, they've got civil partnerships. We've got to give them marriage. So next logical step. And with this, it started off as specific for the referendum that you would let 16-year-olds vote. But then a couple of years later, there was general election. And of course, now that we've had them voting in the referendum, we can't deny them a vote in a general election, which is in some ways just as important as a referendum. So that's how it's fitted in through the back door.
It sounds like you're talking about that horrible fallacy that never plays out. It's the slippery slope that... that myth that never comes to fruition. But talking about the 16-year-olds, though, this is... our government has got a hold on education. There was a scandal, so they were pushing for the 16-year-olds to vote, but at the same time, they were putting on mock elections in schools where the only option was voting for the SNP. And then there was also a lot of anti-union education, so basically like demonising the union. So they're basically indoctrinating these children to hate the union, pre-programming them to vote the SNP and then giving them a ballot paper.
That's incredible. And I know people could say, well, every government shapes its public or the public. And that's true. But something is happening here that's very explicit. I mean, it's brazenly political. It's brazenly partisan, what's going on here. And I think this is an interesting example because Scotland isn't as slick. The establishment there is not as slick at doing this kind of thing as Westminster. They've got less experience of it. But I also think they've got less need to be secretive about it, because there's just less opposition to them. So they can afford to be more open. And either way, that seems to be the way it plays out, that something that would be done quite subtly in Westminster is just out in the open with the Scots, with the Holyrood and so on. We should say that the Parliament has only existed for 25 years, something like that. I think devolution was 98. And I don't really have a position on this. I think probably the way things should go is that smaller countries should split up. I think that it's probably for the best, because identity is more concentrated. It's more local. And I voted against independence in 2014. I would now vote for it. But the trouble is, I know that voting for it would leave Scotland exposed to the regime who would be poised, well, who are already in charge of it. It's clearly a globalist regime. And you see the same in Ireland with Sinn Féin. It's a nationalist, ostensibly nationalist party that is actually globalist. And so voting for independence is in some sense, voting out of the fireplace into the, or in, out of the frying pan into the fire. But at the same time, I think long term, it probably is the way things are going to go anyway. I mean, would you like to talk about that before we get into the stuff that you listed that you wanted to talk about? The issue of Scottish independence and the regime that's in charge of Scotland. What would you say about all that?
See, I think it's interesting that we both changed our position on it. So you'd vote for it and I'd vote against it now, whereas in 2014, the shoes never fit. I think it's quite interesting. But my worry with independence... Sorry, carry on.
No, I would... See, it's not that... I think that the United Kingdom was always an artificial... I mean, you could say every state is an artificial construct to some extent. But I think that the United Kingdom existed really for the empire. And now that the empire isn't there, I think it would be better for us to revert to our local identities. The issue is that the people, the stewards of that, of our local identities, want to destroy them. That's the problem. But anyway, that's my own position. So I won't interrupt you again. You just give your own perspective on all this.
Well, my concern with independence now is who we have. Well, basically steering the ship, we've got Hamza Yousaf in place. He wasn't voted in. The electorate don't like him. He's very unpopular. Even when the party voted for him, he didn't get the overall popular vote there to go to secondary votes, and even then he kind of scraped by. But shortly after he was kind of sworn in as First Minister. This is a man when he finally got into Parliament. He was basically sworn in, firstly in English, then secondly in Urdu. He's created his own tartan that's on display in an Asian museum in Glasgow, complete butchering our culture. But anyway, when he was elected as First Minister, I say elected, but shortly after that, I think it was...
Installed as First Minister.
Like, yeah, installed is probably better, yeah. He was doing an interview with some Pakistani news outlet, and Hamza Yousaf is Pakistani himself, ethnically. And he explicitly said, he didn't mince his words, he said, "I'm a son of the soil of Pakistan, and I will look to increase immigration from Pakistan and also investment to Pakistan from Scotland." So straight away... Fresh in the door. I don't know if you saw the display him and his family done. Really, they started doing some prayer in Butte House, which was great.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that clearly. It was a bunch of, it was like four or five men. And I remember people saying, well, where are the women? They don't know. If that's the problem. Understand.
Yeah, but it was just a complete show of domination. And this is a man that he doesn't respect Scotland. He's interested in power. He's interested in lifting up his own group. He's constantly pushing for special protections for ethnicities that aren't Scottish. I'm sure you've saw that infamous white speech where he was complaining that Scotland was too white.
Absolutely. And in fact, I've got it loaded in if you want to
go for it.
I can play it. Okay, this is Hamza Yousaf. I think this will work. Let me just check this. Oh, bugger. No, it's not going to work. I'll get it and see what we can do. But you just give an introduction for it just now.
Yeah, so this was after the George Floyd carry-on. So as you know, governments always have these laws they want to pass, just waiting until there's an event that they can then use that as justification. So... some black guy overdosed 3,000 miles away, and Scotland need hate speech laws now. Ridiculous, but that's the framing they used. But he stood up in Parliament. His evidence of how racist and discriminatory Scotland was is how white everything was. He wasn't the only one that went on this rant. Actually, before Hamza done it, Anna Sarwar, who is, again, I'm sure he's Pakistani as well, he's the Labour leader. So he's the opposition leader who also doesn't like Scottish people. Went on the identical rant, which I've shared on Twitter as well. I'm quite proud to say that clip of Humza going on the white speech was sent to me from another Scottish commentator resisting the lies. I then put it out on Twitter. And then, see, Callum, Sargon's right-hand man, the Lotus Eaters, Callum, can't remember his surname.
Yeah.
He then shared that, and then it just kind of escalated from there. Now that white speech follows him about like a bad smell. Anytime he tweets, it's just people are right on it. But it just shows the kind of state of Scottish politics. So we can get into his hate crime bill that's gone live early 2024 as well. But
yeah, I can't show you the video, but I can play the audio. So sorry about this, everyone. But here is Humza Yousaf. He was installed as the First Minister. He wasn't elected. And here he is speaking in the Scottish Parliament about the state of race relations in Scotland.
I'm not hearing anything, mind.
Sorry, here we go. Right.
Still nothing for me, mate.
Really? That's very strange. I don't understand that. I'm playing it, but it's not playing. Well, okay, sorry, we'll forget about that. So people can look it up. Humza Yousaf, white speech. And he goes through all these different positions, the judiciary, the police, headmasters of schools, councillors and so on. And he's, well, not councillors, because they are heavily ethnic at this point. But all these positions of authority in Scottish society and how it's a white person. White, white, white. And he actually sounds angry. Which is, I mean, the presumptuousness is amazing. They've been here a few decades. They're still a tiny percentage of the Scottish population, and yet they're outraged, or pretending to be outraged because they know it will work for them, that they're not more predominant in Scottish society, not in terms of numbers, but in terms of prestige, authority, power, and so on. And I don't know... It's difficult to know where to begin with this. If I were in China as a minority, a tiny minority of the Chinese population, I would just shut up. Honestly, I'd be scared of saying anything about the state of Chinese society, because if I did, I would think it likely that they would kick me out of the country. And I would think it probably right that they do so, because I'm a subversive foreign element in that society. Ruining it for the majority who have been there for millennia. It would just seem insane for me to presume any ownership of that society, even if I'd been born there. And I often say this, you know, if I moved to China with a white woman and we had white kids who were born there, those kids would never be regarded as Chinese, ever. Same with Japan, same with the Middle East, same with Africa. It's only white countries where we have this ridiculous idea that you can move here, or you can be born here, or you can even just show up here last week and you're as Scottish as anyone. I mean, it's utterly deluded.
We can vote in our elections, and politicians will say that if you're here for an hour, not even a week, an hour, you're just as Scottish as people that have lived here for generations and generations. It's insane, but... Off the back of his performance and Anna Sarwar's performance and weaponizing the death of George Floyd or the suicide, you could say, what they've done to Derek Chauvin is ridiculous. But they've got this new, I don't know if you call it a campaign, in Scottish Parliament. It started off with another foreigner, Talat Yacoub. She started this campaign called Women 50-50, which was basically getting 50% of females in Parliament by, I can't remember what year it was, it's been a while since I've looked at that, but there was a goal set, and the kind of game plan for that was, we're going to put these women in seats we know we're going to win. They're guaranteed to then up the representation. And then, after all the kind of racial stuff of the George Floyd era, they then launched this new thing where it was minorities, putting them in seats that they're guaranteed to win, to then up the representation so that everything isn't so white. And it's just, they're just fixing the game, you know. These aren't people that have been genuinely elected in to represent. They just, they're installing them just for having brown faces or female faces. It's in bonus if they get both a brown female.
Yeah, I think that you've got to assume that this is happening not organically, not spontaneously, but as a result of global powers that have captured Scotland. And that is the danger of it separating from England, from Westminster, of breaking up the United Kingdom. Scotland would then be entirely owned by international powers. And, of course, it would give itself over to the EU, which seems very much past its time. To join the EU now, I don't know, it would be like buying a pair of flared trousers now. You know, why? Why would you do it? It's not the time anymore. It's over. But the EU does still exist, and it is still very powerful. But either way, doesn't really matter. The point is that Scotland is in thrall to global powers who see it, I think, as a rather naive country, a rather naive people who can be easily manipulated, just like the Irish. And I think it's true, unfortunately, because the Scots have this weakness, this vulnerability, in that they have been dominated by the English historically. Now, it's more nuanced than that. Scots were high up in the empire and all of that. But either way, the way it's remembered is that we were dominated by the English. And you can use that to manipulate the Scots. Would you have anything to say about all of that?
No, you're right, because I think it should be. I know Morgoth coined bulldog nationalism for the kind of Sivnat, anyone can be English types. But I think Braveheart nationalism kind of captures what the kind of Scottish politics is. And you're right, it's the history. It's the David versus Goliath. And that's why we always opt for what's perceived as the David. That's why we always want. But if you look at Celtic games, there's a lot of kind of Irish diaspora in there, like waving the Palestinian flag, because they see them as the David versus the Goliath, which is true. I think I probably agree with that. But we're always opting for the underdog constantly. We see ourselves as the underdog, and what the SNP have done successfully up until, I would say, recently, because of the endless scandals and investigated fraud, misusing money, which we can get into if you want, but they used independence as the carrot and the stick. There's two strategies they go with, is independence, free yourself, freedom, Braveheart nationalism, and Westminster bad, essentially, fuck the English, is the thing that is unsaid, but it's pretty clear. And it's similar to the way the Tories operate. They'll talk very tough on immigration when it's the run-up to the election, because they know that's the number one issue. And they'll also hope that people vote, hold their nose and vote, because at least it's not Labour. Imagine how bad it would be under Labour. You've got the kind of same dynamic. Imagine if we had a Tory government. Tory's bad. Remember Margaret Thatcher? It's all this, as you say, tall tales that are told from generation to generation, which aren't always 100% accurate, but it does bring a lot of emotion and nose-holding.
Do you think that the SNP as a party really wants Scottish independence? Or do you think it's a ploy just to manipulate the Scottish public and gain political power?
I think initially they did. There was a lot of diehard independence people in the party. I think now, not so much. I think there's a pro-EU party and pro, basically, globalisation. They're not interested in Scotland, the history. The only thing they seem to be keen on is teaching immigrants like Gaelic for some reason. All right, so we're completely replaced, but at least the Africans can speak a wee bit of Gaelic.
At least we're not speaking English.
Yeah, exactly. Aye, that's it.
The thing is, if it were not for the immigration, I would be up for Scottish school kids learning Gaelic. I think it's a damn good idea because it would harden, it would strengthen their sense of Scottish identity. You know, I don't have a problem with that. But it's the fact that you would actually be teaching it to brown kids. So to manufacture this fake Scottishness. And, of course, it would also separate the Scottish kids from their English cousins. So it's unhealthy. It would be unhelpful in that way. I don't know. What do you think about the teaching of Gaelic?
No, I'd probably agree with you. If it was done for the reasons we would like it, fair enough. Yeah, go for it. I think I can't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure it's less than 2% of Scotland actually speak Gaelic. A lot of it's kind of the Highlands and Islands. There's especially the Islands. I mean, I've been there, and they kind of chop and change between English and Gaelic. It's strange listening to it, because obviously I don't speak Gaelic myself, never learned it, but it's interesting, and you do see the strong community spirit, the strong identity they have because of their upbringing, the things that are... They just seem... Like, when you visit the islands, you think... Well, I thought I was Scottish. It's surreal, but yeah. No, I agree. I would be up for it if it was done for the right reasons. But to me, it's done to sell this fantasy that the politicians care about Scotland and the Scottish people and the heritage when they don't care about it. It's a show to hopefully win votes, which I think the rest of the elections are going to play out like a recent local election. I think the SNP are done. It's going to be a Labour landslide, I would say. Not because votes are transferring. It's just SNP voters aren't getting off the couch. They're not interested. Exactly. And also, they've got this toxic kind of coalition with the Green Party where they're just bringing in the most unpopular policies on the planet. The SNP are signing off on it because they need the Greens to do what they want to do. And people just switched off. So the last local election, Labour, compared to 2019, lost 1,000 votes, but still won because 15,000 SNP voters didn't bother to get off their arse because they're just fed up. And I think that's going to... You're going to see that everywhere, I would say, because, as I say, the ongoing scandals, the fraud, I think a lot of people have realised that independence is really a carrot on a stick, and there's never any accountability for failures. It's always pointing to the guy south. It's their fault.
Yeah. There does seem to have been a lot of corruption. I mean, Nicola Sturgeon, so Alex Salmond was sort of, I can't remember exactly how this happened, but it was quite... My memory of it is that it was very out of the blue and sort of violent the way he was forced out of, deposed or ousted, and he was replaced with Nicola Sturgeon. I can't remember when that happened now, but it was about, I don't know, 2010, 2012. And then he went off and created the Scottish ALBA party. And it's worth saying that even that is, I mean, it's a minor party that doesn't really stand a chance of gaining power anytime soon. And yet even that had a party political broadcast that was as diverse as, you know, your average department store Christmas advert, or even worse. Yeah. Even worse. It was astonishing how they'd gone out of their way to find ethnic minority candidates for this tiny party, as if as if that would help them. And I think it won't help them, because I think that the Scottish people, I mean, I'm called all sorts of horrible things. But I don't think I'm actually that unusual. And I think a lot of Scottish people are very socially conservative and not up for diversity. They've got no interest in it. It's not that they have they're not ethno-nationalist. They're not conscious of it in that way. But they do have those feelings. They're not interested. And when they see Hamza Yousaf or Anas Sarwar, they're not going to get excited about that. Now, there will be the bloody annoying middle-class white Scottish woman who does get excited for diversity. But even her husband is quietly thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, Maureen, shut up. And everyone else is, I just don't think it appeals to them. What would you say about that?
I think similar to the Irish, there is a strong ethno-nationalist spirit that's just waiting to be awoken, you know. Like, I think we're kind of sleepwalking into not a very bright future. But I think as soon as they wake up to what's actually happening, they will wake up. And I've had conversations with SNP voters, and their mindset is basically independence at any cost. You get the few radicals that are pro mass immigration, and I've even heard people say, I mean, we could, with the amount of space we've got, like, think of all the fields, we could easily house another 15 million people, and that's like the extremes. Whereas your normal kind of independence voters, the SNP have basically exploited the inbuilt nationalism of Scots to win votes. Whereas I think, like, when you start explaining all the flawed policies, the anti-free speech things that's going on, the transgenderism for children, all the things they're actually doing, while there, any time there's a media appearance for the SNP, it's always independence, Westminster bad. Independent, that's everything they say. They'll never tell you about all the things that's getting done in the background, because they know how unpopular it would be, and they're hoping to win, zoning in and as I say, Braveheart nationalism. But I think that they've done that death. It's not going to work. And just on the comment in the ALBA party, I think ALBA, the way I explain them, is they're essentially the SNP without the trannies. That's it. That's all they are. They're still pro-diversity, the I'm not racist, all the usual stuff. And I think Alex Salmon played his cards right. The ALBA party were kind of operating in the background. There was a lot of people defecting to it. But as soon as the SNP fraud scandal happened, he then started making TV appearances, promoting his party. Ash Reagan, she was one of the runners for the First Minister position. She's now defected to ALBA. And I think he's going to try and build this independence force without the Greens. You know, it's like a lot of stuff that turns off voters. So I think he may make a comeback if he plays his cards right.
I hope he does, actually. I kind of like him. He seems at least more straightforward and more decent than Nicola Sturgeon and the likes of Hamza Yousaf and Anas Sarwar, for whom I have absolutely no... I feel nothing for these men. I mean, I just don't know why they're there. Well, you know, literally in Scotland, I feel no connection to them at all. And I don't believe that they feel any connection to me at all. But I wanted to get back to the point you make is a very important one, that the actual policies of the SNP are the diametric opposite of what their supporters want. And it's amazing that a political party could do this and that a government could do this. But they're able to do it because of the strength of the anti-English thing and the pro-independence thing. That is enough to distract their supporters. It sort of entrances them. And then the party can get away with all this other stuff that they would hate. To get back to the chronology of Nicola Sturgeon, she took it over. I think that there was a sense that she was a sort of tyrant and that things were happening that were not above board. I don't know, and I don't really care about the financial improprieties or whatever, because when we're talking about the destruction of a nation, you know, some woman stealing some money is just small beer. You know, demographic change is the real threat. It's the real thing that could destroy Scotland. And I often think it's annoying when, and it's understandable that the news is going to focus on the trivial stuff, but they can't touch this, which is profound. And of course, it would get them prosecuted for hate speech if they were to talk about what's actually going on and what the effects of it will be, for the native Scots. The entire establishment is corrupt in that sense. But to get back to it, so Nicola Sturgeon, and then she was sort of tyrannical. There were corruption scandals or allegations and whatever. And then she was ousted. When was that? About a year ago now. Would you take up the story from there? And this is when Hamza was installed.
Well, there was fraud allegations that the SNP, or Nicola and her husband, I don't know if your audience are aware that Nicola Sturgeon was the First Minister, but her husband was like the CEO of the SNP. He ran all the books. So they were working together in this. But they raised, I think it was over 600,000 of donations from their supporters to be ring-fenced for a second independence referendum. And that money went missing. It wasn't held for an independence run. They found that Peter Murrell allegedly bought some expensive cars and then sold them on We Buy Any Car for a loss, for assumed to sloppily try and hide money. I don't know how he thought that would work, but he's bought camper vans. He thought if he parked at his mum's house, that would somehow mean it's not his, which, it's very lazily done. They've also, it's not just the 600,000. There was the ferry scandal. I don't know if you've heard of that. Well, they gave a contract to a company that during the investigation, they can't understand why this company was given the contract. There's no reasoning for it. It was like Ferguson Marina or whatever in Glasgow. But they've spent three times over the expected amount. I think it's like 360 million they've now spent on two ferries that were meant to be kind of eco-friendly ferries. They're unable to account for 130 million of that. All taxpayer money. Yeah. And when they'd done this big reveal, because the people were pushing for them to say, well, where's all this money going? Let's see the progress. And they've unveiled this ship. And it was so far behind, and there's so much money wasted on it. You can tell that it's a money laundering operation, clearly. That they revealed this ship, and the windows were painted on to look like real windows. You need to Google the Glen Sannox. The Glen Sannox.
Okay.
GlenSannox. And they've painted the windows on for this big reveal to go, oh, look, we've progressed this contract that the taxpayer's paying for that's ridiculously overpriced. They've also slashed the agricultural budget by 28 million when there's a £61 million black hole. And this is money coming from Westminster, by the way. So they can't account for 61 million of the agricultural budget while slashing it and 160 million of this ferry. They've also done fundraising events, raffles and all sorts. Aye, look, there's a painted on windows. It's insane. Her and her husband just ran the party as an enrichment exercise. Now, she was a really good speaker, so when you saw her in camera or giving speeches, she's a lawyer to trade. So they're experts at lying. They're experts at saying a lot without saying anything. And she was very good at that, but they've just gutted the party, the taxpayer. It's mental. And now she even tried to get the them to not publicly show the evidence of the case and that get rejected. So hopefully we'll see actually what's going on when the investigation's concluded. But a lot of people have said that the fact they've not made the investigators and the government haven't made any statements on it they should have reported more by the time they've been given, you know. So there's a lot of people are thinking there's a lot of hush-hush going on because Police Scotland are essentially the kind of enforcement wing of the SNP. You see that. To go back to Hamza, I know I've went on a tangent. I told you that beforehand. I will off on tangent, but we will return.
That's interesting stuff.
That's some of the scandals. That's not all of them. There's a lot of sex scandals as well, which we can get into if you want. But the whole First Minister run, there's a party standard. It's meant to run for X amount of time. I can't remember exactly now offhand, but it was significantly reduced. It was like they basically put the accelerator on. They got it done as quickly as possible. And there's also talk that they basically withheld the announcement of the scandal until the First Minister position was kind of concluded, because Hamza ran as the continuity candidate, which if it was a big scandal and he was a continuity candidate, they'd be like, no thanks. And even that, as I say, he got the position by the skin of his teeth, you know. So if there was a scandal alongside that, I think you'd be looking at a Kate Forbes First Minister right now. And she was a strong Christian, which she get dragged over the coals for. Whereas as soon as Hamza gets in, he does a prayer with his brothers and Butte House, and that's fine. But she gets
this is astonishing
for Christianity.
This is just amazing. It's like, as I was saying earlier, the Scots just don't realise the situation. You can moan about someone being a Christian, but this guy is a Muslim. That this is, it's a hell of a lot more conservative than Christianity. It's a hell of a lot more sexist and homophobic and even transphobic than Christianity. And yet it just seems to go under the radar. They just don't realize it. But of course, it's not really the Scots. It's the regime. It's globalist interests who will absolutely want a Muslim in power. And will absolutely not want a Christian in power, because that might strengthen Christianity in Scotland, which would strengthen the Scottish people and spiritually strengthen them. So, no, it's better if it's a foreigner. The more foreign, the better. And the more of them, the better. It's also important to say that Hamza Yousaf is a Muslim and a practicing one, but he doesn't seem to... he does seem to go along with the wokery, the trans stuff, the gay stuff. What would you say about that? And obviously this is illegally, you're going to be careful what you say.
Yeah.
You know, go for it.
I have heard, I've not confirmed this, but I've heard he's not welcome at the main Glasgow mosque because of a lot of the stances he holds in Parliament. Again, that's rumours. Could be a lot of rubbish, but the way I look at his public position versus his private religious position is, I think it's one of two things. He's either putting on the Muslim thing to make sure he gets the Muslim votes because they are an expanding group. You see that in certain areas of Glasgow you go to. They're very dominant in certain areas. Or it's the kind of Israel-Palestine expansion kind of argument that they had initially when a lot of the Ashkenazis first went to Palestine. They had a policy of 1 acre, one goat, 1 acre, one goat, until we are a force to be reckoned with, and then we will assert our power. So I don't know if he's doing a 1 acre, one goat culturally, and then as soon as there's enough representation, he'll throw all that in the bin and become a dominant force, but I don't know.
One other thing I meant to say earlier, relating to the woke stuff. Just before Nicola Sturgeon was stepped down, and I think, yeah, she stepped down. She wasn't ousted. Officially, she wasn't ousted. Officially, she stepped down. But just before that happened, there was a minor, not scandal exactly, but a farce, where there was something about trans, I forgot what it was now, but it was something to do with the trans issue. And she was asked on air by on the media, basically the what is a woman question, and she was unable to, what was it about now? It was something specific. Like, should a woman, I think it was about prisons, like, should a man who identifies, a biological man who identifies as a woman, should he go to a woman's prison? Something, it was something of that
ilk. Yeah, I could fill in the gaps if you want.
Right, go for it. Because the thing I really wanted to pick up on was that even she didn't understand the ideology, the whole woke stuff. It was just bollocks.
So the scandal was, there was a very beautiful woman called Isla Bryson that had a Mike Tyson tattoo and a bulge in the leggings that was then getting put in a female prison. I think they were a triple rapist and they were getting placed in one of the female prisons. And there was a big fuss about that. The main focus was that Isla Bryson, I can't remember the guy's actual name, but Google Isla Bryson and get a picture up just for the audience. It's hilarious. But this person's a woman. And there's also, I don't have a Freedom of Information request. I need to dig it up. But there was, I'd say, a good like 15 men in women's prisons. But the focus was this one because of how insanely criminal looking the person was. I don't know what it was, but she was raked over the coals with that. The party was raked over the coals. The Greens, the coalition had with them, a lot of them were asked if this was acceptable. People either ignored it, said it was acceptable, or kind of dodged it. I can't remember Nicola Sturgeon's response. Can you fill in the gaps for me there? What is it she said that didn't explain the ideology?
Well, it was just nervousness that she couldn't answer the question. That was the issue. I have found a photo. I'm trying to load it, but it's a file type that StreamYard doesn't like, which is a damn shame because...
You want me to load it on my browser and I'll just be on my browser?
It would yield some hilarity if I did post this, but what I'll do is I'll just take a screenshot of it. Hold on a second. This is Isla Bryson. My God. And this is a weird thing. Like, you know, in the first place, we were sold LGBT on the grounds that it was, they made it look slick. You know, back in the 90s, they made it look sort of cool. And then, but when it actually lands in working class Scottish communities, this is what it looks like. There.
It's gorgeous. How many pints was how many?
I mean,
just a fresh orange.
This is pretty bad, you know. That even without the bulge, this doesn't look like a terribly well adjusted or well balanced person. You know, even without the trans stuff, I mean, just that looks like a bit of a headbanger. The guy in the way.
I'm pretty certain he's a triple rapist, and they thought, right, this person's put a blonde wig on, a pair of leggings, and done their nails. Right, get that rapist in the female prison, that'll go well.
Yeah. And then, of course, once they're in the female prison, there's the severe danger that they're just going to rape.
Yeah.
And I don't know how often it's happened, how many times it's happened with different people, but there is obviously a huge danger. And for the female prisoners, they're going to feel in immense danger.
Sorry, I'm just laughing at the woodlander. You just said, at least a bottle of Bucky.
But this is it. You know, this is the reality of it. It ends up, like this whole ideology, it ends up screwing people up and leading them down bad paths, leading them ever farther away from sanity, from health, you know, spiritual health. It's corrupting. It's a corrupting ideology. There's a whole lot that could be said about that. I'll just leave it.
The expectation expectation versus reality meme, where it's like the Thai ladyboys versus reality.
yeah, exactly. So that's that. And so Nicola Sturgeon, I think the issue was that she just couldn't really, or she gave some long-winded answer. The lawyer answer. Yeah, but it wasn't a very good lawyer answer, because everyone could tell she doesn't understand this. So that confirms that the whole ideology actually is just bullshit. Like, she knows that a guy who happens to identify or says that he's a woman, she knows damn well that that guy shouldn't go into a women's prison, but she can't say that because that would be transphobic.
Yeah.
So she has to pretend that it's sane and right to put that man in a female prison. But I remember,
sorry,
Alexander,
I keep laughing at your chat. As long as a couple of square sausages for tits.
But I remember Alex Salmond, as he said, he did a lot of media appearances around that time. And I remember him making hay out of this and saying, look, it's obvious no one really understands the ideology and no one's interested in it.
Yeah.
And that's true. I mean, the Scottish people must be thinking, what the fuck is this? Where has it come from? And why are we now talking about this all the time? Why am I constantly hearing about this? We never needed this in the past. Even 10 years ago, it was a different world, let alone 50 years ago. Uh-oh. And there will be people in their 60s who are thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, Scotland was more sane in my childhood. And yeah, they're right.
I just want to wave my yes flag and get independence with all this, like, tranny rapists in prison.
yeah. And then especially teaching it to children. I mean, that...
Yeah, that's a big thing, because there was a few things working kind of simultaneously. There was that scandal. There was also the sex survey scandal, which I don't know if you've heard of. I had countless people emailing their local councillors and putting a lot of pressure on, because they launched this survey, which was the parents just got a message in their kind of like primary school app that lets them know about upcoming things. And all the information they got was, we're doing this little kind of census thing. If you don't want your child doing it, just let us know. So anyone that's ever done one of these things, I've just assumed it's a normal census. It's a normal questionnaire. And what it turned out to be, which was leaked to the press, was they were asking children, I think from seven or eight up, about anal sex, oral sex, their gender identity. So they've basically give the parents minimal knowledge, so they would just go, yeah, that's fine. Like, they'll not opt them out, whereas if they were honest with the parents about everything that was included in this questionnaire, there'd be mass outrage. People would pull their kids out of schools. Like, it wouldn't be happening now. Some schools did continue on with the questionnaire as is. Others altered it to make it more age appropriate, and others just binned it completely. But that's how secretive and how determined they are to socially engineer your children with all this nonsense that shouldn't be anywhere near them.
And determined is the word. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a very fervent desire to impose this on the culture, on the people, and especially on the children. There's no question. It's clear. They are trying to change the culture and change the people psychologically.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they're trying to make everyone a transgender. I don't think so. That's absurd. I think it's more subtle than that. In the same way that, you know, if you have violent video games, that doesn't mean that everyone's going to go out with a chainsaw, but it changes the entire culture. And I think the presence of the trans thing changes the entire culture. And that's what's being done here.
It's even just being a parent. I obviously talked to my wife about this stuff, and we are very conscious of what's getting taught in school. But she's had conversations with her mums about what the Scottish government's doing, and she's not political in any way. When I try and talk to her about politics, she's like, listen, I just want to pretend everything's brilliant, just leave me alone. But some things I've talked to her about, and then she'll is then speak to the mums at the gates, and they'll be outraged about what's getting taught. Now, as I said, it's not getting taught in my kids' school. If it was, they'd be out of it pretty promptly. But just the what they're looking to push, the Scottish Government are very good at giving advice and guidance. So they don't say it's law. They go, this is guidance. But however, if you don't follow the guidance, you might not score very well. So it's like, it's essentially a dictate, but disguised as guidance. So it will eventually be in all the schools. And as the older teachers that just want to teach children ABC 1, 2, 3, as they're retiring, and the younger generation of teachers coming in through the universities, they will just be basically state indoctrination machines. And that's my concern. Thankfully, the school my kids are at, there's a lot of old school teachers, but
yeah,
I think some of them are due retirement, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, my own, I've had in my family, there were teachers, and they were trained in the early 70s and retired about 10 years ago. I guess the teachers who are now just retiring would have been trained in the 80s, and they'll now be, or early 80s, and they'll now be heading towards retirement, which leaves people who were trained in the 90s. And so that will be the older generation of teachers now. The senior ones will be ones who were trained in the 90s. And they'll, I guess, just be sort of baffled by this. It's really the young ones who will be all up for it. The ones who were trained in the 2000s and the 2010s, the young teachers of today. Oh my God, I can't imagine what you must have to agree with in order to get through a teacher training qualification today or in the last 10 years. It hardly bears thinking about. Because when I think about my own teachers when I was a kid, I remember these old women. One of them made us do the Lord's Prayer every morning at the start. And it wasn't even a religious school. It was a mainstream state primary school. But she had the leeway still in those days, around 1990, to have us doing the Lord's Prayer. Now, she, I'm guessing, would have been trained in the 40s, 50s maybe. I'm not sure. When would that? Yeah, the 50s, I guess, should have been trained. So, a different world, you know, because in those days, teachers were kind of straight-laced, you know, a bit staid and not adventurous. You'd just, even if they saw themselves as liberal compared to their parents, they were basically conservative socially. They believed in just normality. I guess the problem is that word, the meaning of that word, the definition of normality changes all the time. And so the teacher of today will still think of herself as standing for normality. But normality means a brown guy in charge of Scotland and kids being asked about anal sex when they're 7 and kids being encouraged to transition when they're 13. I mean, that's...
Well, even some of the guidance, I've done a big, massive video on this. I know a lot of people don't like watching videos that are half an hour long or 45 minutes long, but it's a very meaty and hefty subject, and there's a lot of references you need to kind of go to. But some of the guidance that's given to schools that if a child starts displaying transgenderism, you can give them this list of like reading material and videos to consume. So there's links to YouTube videos, which one of them was My Generation, which is my generation, but we are tranny spin. And they were promoting getting hormones illegally because without hormones, they don't feel like them. And that's directed towards kids. They also had a thing that they quietly deleted, which was a book called Beyond Magenta, which I've got the archive link that existed in the Scottish Government's webpage, Guidance for Schools. And this was talking about a child having a great gay oral experience at like 10 years old and how amazing it was for them. Like, this is the reading material and videos they're directing children towards. But then they, when that was exposed, they quietly deleted that. I'd probably recommend if you're interested in doing like a deep dive into this at any point, like just in videos or maybe next year, Millennial, is, I don't know if you're familiar with a guy called Dr. Bruce Scott.
No, I'm not.
No, he's a Scottish guy. I think he's a psychologist to trade. And he's done a lot of work on trying to get some of this stuff out of schools and also exposing the Scottish government for the perverted nature of education.
Is he on YouTube?
He's got a small YouTube channel, but he's got a pretty decent sized Twitter account. I'll send you the link later, but he's a solid guy. Good to listen to as well.
Right. Yeah, as I said, I've really fallen away from YouTube, unfortunately, as I miss some things. I think you could really talk about this for hours because it's so, it is important. It's not just interesting, like intellectually, it is. It's grim as well, but it's important because this is the education that Scottish kids are getting now, and of course are going to get in the future. There was another aspect to this that, the transgender conversion therapy ban that they're attempting to push through. That links to what we're seeing now. So would you like to go into that? And again, this is specifically about Scotland. I think people should see this, hopefully, this stream will serve as a sort of encapsulate, a summary of the situation in Scotland just now. And this transgender ban is an interesting one now. Please go into it.
Yeah, of course. Again, I've done like a 45-minute video on this. The thumbnail's like Nicola Sturgeon as Emperor Palpatine, like electroshocking trannies.
Your thumbnails aren't good.
But for a deep dive and references, I'd recommend you go look at that. But before I talk about that, just something that I think ties into the conversion therapy ban, which will kind of solidify it with schools, is part of the guidance as well for schools when it comes to a trans child, which to me, I see that as like, and you're Scottish, I think you said you've got family from kind of the West Coast, but I see a trans kid as, have you ever got like one of those friends or a family member that's saying like, see my wee two-year-old, me Jimmy, he's a diehard Celtic fan or a diehard Rangers fan. He's got my kit and everything. You're like, he doesn't give a fuck about Celtic or Rangers. You've imposed that. That's your idea, and that's trans children to me. It's the same thing as a diehard sports fan, 2-year-old. You're like, that's pish. But anyway, part of the guidance for schools is if the teacher deems that the parents may be unsupportive of the transitioning, they can socially transition the child at school and then send them home as whatever. So say your kid is Jimmy at home. He goes to school and he's then Jasmine at school. But as soon as he leaves the school gates, he's back to Jimmy and you're none the wiser. They can make that choice for you as a parent.
This would be seen just a couple of, like maybe a decade ago, certainly a couple of decades ago, this would have been seen as the most egregious child abuse. And now it's not just allowed, it's mandated, isn't it? Well, if this legislation comes in, it will be mandatory for teachers to do this.
Well, you're always taught as a kid, like, see if an adult says to you, don't tell your parents. Tell your fucking parents. Yes. They're grooming you. They're,
That's emblematic of the whole thing, where they're intervening on the relationship of a child with his parent. And that actually links to another thing, just tangentially.
Yeah.
Bloody tangent. But the named persons scheme, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Maybe go into that, just because it actually is a precursor to what we're now talking about here.
Yeah, they've kind of rebranded that as I think called Getting It Right for Every Child, which is the named person scheme under another umbrella, which is essentially there's a state appointed person that will have overall say on your child's well-being. They can decide whether the social worker will get involved if they think maybe you've shouted at them a bit too much. And maybe you've smacked them in the bum and they think, no, actually we'll get the social involved. So there's this like state witness that can then determine whether your kid can be in your presence any longer. It's been a while since I've looked at the named person scheme, but that's the kind of gist of it. But if you look at the kind of framework for getting it right for every child, it's essentially the same thing. Yeah, there's still state actors making decisions that really shouldn't be. But to jump back to the trans conversion therapy ban, this is something that this is live in other countries, but Scotland, again in this video I've got all the references and also these people speaking publicly in Parliament about it. They want this being the most extreme version of the trans conversion therapy ban that exists today. And they pride themselves on that. And essentially what the conversion therapy ban is it's stopping doctors, psychologists, parents, religious institutions. It will probably only be weaponized against Christians or I don't see Muslims getting taken to court over this, but if there's any prayer to try and help this child that's mentally challenged with the trans thing. And they have admitted again in Parliament that this will be predominantly directed towards trans children. They've admitted that in the video if you want to look at it. They want to stop psychologists from... If a psychologist or a doctor turns around and says, listen, I think you should finish puberty, let your hormones settle, let your brain develop, and then if you still feel the same way, brilliant, we'll cut it off. We'll lop those tits off, you'll be fine. But if they don't encourage transitioning, that's seen as a form of conversion therapy. If a parent says the same thing, listen, I'm not on board with that, wait till you're fully developed, even just the not extreme stance, they're just the normal stance, wait till you're old enough, that would be seen as a form of conversion therapy. And a lot of these witnesses that have been attending these sessions to shape this bill, they're paid for by the government in some way, whether it be direct or they're receiving funding from like a local council. It's just taxpayer money at the end of the day. So you've got LGBT Youth Scotland, you've got Transgender Alliance, I think it is, Scotland. There's all these like activist groups that receive taxpayer money that are then acting as witnesses to then push this bill through. So it's one of those things, they've already got it in the back burner, they want it passed, and then they, again, rig the game to make sure it goes through. And I mentioned to you this before this went live, they want to ban prayer. Prayer is a form of conversion therapy. So it's essentially a reverse conversion therapy. The only route to this transgender problem is transgenderism. They've even said during these kind of meetings to shape the bill is if a child decides like off their own back that they don't want to transition anymore, it was a mistake. They don't see that person as mentally capable of making that decision because there must have been some form of abuse to make them think that. There must have been some form of discrimination to make them decide that transgenderism's not for them. So even if a kid says, nah, I'm all right, actually this was a phase, like being a goth or an emo. Yeah. No, you must be an emo. You must slit your wrist. You must be a goth. It's insane. It's not live yet, but there's not any pushback.
So it's finding ways, it's eliminating the various ways in which a child would not transition. It's eliminating the various ways in which they would change their mind. And it's eliminating the various ways in which someone else could intervene to slow them down, to calm them down, make them think about it. That is now seen as abuse and conversion away from trans. Yeah.
And they intentionally use conversion therapy because people will automatically get a picture in their head of electric shock therapy, taking them away to a camp to correct their behaviour. They would never But so when they see this in the media where it's, we want to ban trans conversion therapy, the public will not look into it. They'll just go, oh, that sounds fair. Whereas the reality is restrictions on parents' parental rights, restrictions on doctors. Doctors could lose their job that they've trained years to get. They've got a gun to their head saying, you must do this or this will happen. They're not told any of that. So they intentionally use this language. It's similar to the kind of over-the-top, everything's a Holocaust or everything's Nazi Germany. But it's the same thing. It invokes a feeling and a response without thinking. So they go, well, they've said that, therefore bad, and right, okay, you've got my support. Whereas if they even just scraped the surface, they go, whoa, wait a minute, this is not what I was sold.
Yeah, yeah. It's really terrifying. It just sounds like a country that's going insane and not spontaneously. It's not natural. It's being done. This is being done to it deliberately.
Yeah.
One final thing to go into is the hate speech laws. Now, people might have heard about the Westminster legislation that's coming in, the Online Harms Bill. I think it's now called the Online Safety Bill. They changed the name. I think that's now the name.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's now a more cutesy, cuddly name where it's about keeping people safe. The mentality of what safe means. You know, it's the same thing with the trans thing that we were just talking about. What conversion now doesn't mean the trans conversion, the conversion from your birth thing to something else. The conversion now means moving away from that process. So safe now means something different as well. So my point is that terminology can be abused and redefined in all sorts of ways, and people could actually find themselves using a term not realizing that the definition of that term has actually been changed from underneath them. It's quite amazing. But of course, this does, I'm sorry to invoke 1984, but it is reminiscent of that. It calls that back. All right, so The hate speech legislation, you take that away.
This could be meaty, right? But I'll try and keep it brief. I know you've got, obviously, you'll need a bit of a break before the next one. But this was something that was pushed by Hamza Yousuf, I think, back in 2020, which went viral. People have seen it it was extremely unpopular. They've seen it as anti-free speech. However, it's been reworded. It goes back to that abusive language, where a lot of people's issue with the hate crime bill and its kind of natural form was the dwelling cause. But if you see something in your home privately and someone overhears it, or someone in your house thinks that that's not good, the police come and kick your door in, arrest you and take you to prison for words you've uttered in your own home, the privacy of your own home. Or even if you're at a barbecue in your own house and your neighbour hears you, they could then report that, and then, yeah, that's fine, because within your dwelling, that's not acceptable, even if in the privacy of your own home. So they then went, right, okay, let's reword all this, where the dwelling clause still exists, but it sounds a bit better. It's like the harms to safety, like you pointed out. Well, that's still there. However, it's still the same abuse of Police Scotland. It's still the same abuse on your rights, but it sounds a wee bit better to the ears. So they don't say within your private dwelling. However, if they believe that there is a stirring up of hatred in your home, they have the right to force entry. Not only force entry, they have the right to search anyone that is in the property at that time. And this could result in anything from a fine up to 7 years in prison, or both. You can get a fine and 7 years. But how they define stirring up of hatred is the wording on the bill is, if a reasonable person would consider your behaviour threatening, abusive or insulting. So they perceive it. And what's insulting? Like, I could say something that could insult you that wouldn't insult me or friends I've got. Like, it's just very loosely defined. So that dwelling clause is still there, and it allows Police Scotland to do ridiculous things for an opinion you hold. And not even just an opinion, if you've shared a meme.
All sorts of things can be insulting. I'm insulted by Hamza Yousaf's white speech, but no one's going to give a fuck about that.
Funnily enough, white and male isn't included in these things, so unfortunately they can say all they want about us. But I thought naively at one point, see, there was this kind of rise of the TERFs, the feminist TERFs that don't like the trannies. I thought, right, there's maybe some bridges can be built there. And if they can see that they're deconstructing gender and what it means to be a woman, it'd be pretty easy to cross the bridge that they're deconstructing what it means to be a Scottish person, an Irish person, a German. And they're doing the same thing, but with gender or sex. I thought, right, and some of them I've saw kind of make that leap to maybe a more ethno-nationalist position, whereas I think the majority are just, they're still just men haters at heart, that all they care about is men and their spaces. So there was a big a backlash against this hate crime bill by the TERFs, which I don't know if you've heard of, the Women Won't Weesht movement in Scotland.
Oh yes, I heard about that. Do you want to describe it?
So it's basically a load of feminist TERF, the ones that don't like trannies.
Sorry. We should say that the word "wheesht" is a broad Scots term for be quiet, shut up.
Like shush.
Like hold your wheesht is the expression. It just means stop talking, basically.
Aye, so the whole thing is they thought that their voices were being silenced and men were going to invade women's spaces and this. And you go, right, okay, right, fair enough, you've got an argument there, you've got a valid thing to stand by. But they heard that this hate crime bill was coming in, and instead of assessing it as is, where they go, right, this is clearly an abuse, this is the state are basically getting into your private life, they're getting into your what thoughts and opinions you have, this should not be allowed, it's abuse and free speech, blah, blah, blah. They didn't take that road. They thought, why do we not have protection as women? So they want the same hate crime bill, but with women added on. So now they're pushing the misogyny bill. So essentially the only group in Scotland you can criticise, insult, hate on is basically straight white men. Because the protected groups within this bill, there's like three parts that each hold different punishments. The stirring up of hatred is the most invasive one, but also I'd say the most vague. So I think it's extremely dangerous. But the groups that are protected as age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity, variations in sex characteristics. They've got another catch-all, which is race, colour, nationality, in brackets, including citizenship, or ethnic or national origins. So they'll bring in all these refugees. And if you voice your opinion and criticism, or you use a word that's insulting, then there's a potential for Police Scotland chapping your door and you getting a fine or a prison sentence or both. So they're essentially replacing you and then silencing you. You can't even mention it.
Yeah, you can't complain about the fact that you're being replaced.
Yeah.
I mean, this is... it's just evil.
And as I said, with the Irish thing, they're right to scream and shout about it. I've no problem with that. I've got their backs. However, this Scottish hate crime bill isn't a thing that might be passing. That's going live early 2024. So next year, this will be on the books and there'll be a lot of people terrified to voice their opinion. And our First Minister is notorious for abusing the current hate crime, hate speech bills that already exist, which aren't as extreme. He's had multiple people arrested and charged. He's even had one of his own supporters arrested and charged. A guy that was a diehard SNP, true independence believer, but he caught wind of Humza's anti-white speech in Parliament. And he sent him an email saying, essentially, if you don't like Scotland, if you think it's too white, basically, you shouldn't be here then. So he's then interpreted that as, because you're brown, go back to your home country. And he's got him done with a racially aggravated hate crime. And this guy, when Police Scotland chapped his door, this, I think he was in his 60s, he was going through chemotherapy at the time. So Humza's went on a racist rant. He's responded, and then that guy's got charged and found guilty of a racially aggravated hate crime. And that's before these more extreme ones, that Humza drafted this bill in 2020 and then amended it so that it doesn't sound as bad, but it's still as bad.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. It's enraging. And it's so different from the Scotland that I grew up in. You know, this is the thing. Things change fast, and younger people, if you're in your teens or 20s now, you won't remember the Scotland that I can vaguely remember, that I experienced. And you didn't take it seriously at the time. You didn't know that it was going to go away. But I can vaguely remember it. And it was...
It's like a fish in water.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it was pretty much socially conservative. It was kind of boring in a way, you know, for someone like me who's sought novelty and the city and all that. Rural Scotland, when I was a teenager and adolescent, it seemed kind of boring. But now you realise the value of that. You realise what was actually being lost. It was a culture that had developed over many, many centuries and was the culture of a people. And you can't, well, you can't put a price on that. You know, what you can do is systematically destroy it with legislation, with immigration, and so on. And that's happened incredibly quickly.
Yep.
I mean, if you said to a teacher in the 90s, you know, not too far from now, maybe before you retire, teachers are going to be mandated to help a child encourage a child to change sex and not tell their parents, they just wouldn't believe you.
No, it's insane. And even looking at the kind of demographic realities of Scotland, our birth rates are continuously falling every single year. However, our population is growing every single year. And I've heard this loads from people south of the border. They kind of like shrug off and dismiss the kind of demographic issue we face as a country, because I think they forget that Scotland is a population. We have fewer people in Scotland than London. And look how quickly London changed.
Oh, yeah.
So our nation can change with the snap of a finger. But I think they kind of look at it as, well, England in certain areas are fine, but usually way more people in the population. And even Ireland, they I think they've had a ridiculous influx of immigrants, and they've saw it. Was like a fourth of their population or something. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's like an insane amount.
I think in Dublin it's one in three, I think. I'm not sure. Someone was talking about it the other night. This idea, because the thing is, up until recently, Scotland was relatively untouched by mass immigration. And this was why I was struggling to convey to people after I'd been to London. I'd go back to Scotland and people had just no idea what I was talking about because it was so alien to them. They hadn't experienced diversity because at that time Scotland was still 99% white, probably even more than that. And so these English people who think that we're safe, it's because they've got that now antiquated notion of Scotland as a white homeland, as it were. Yeah. And I remember someone, an English young English woman saying to me someone I'd known at art college, and she got in touch with me after she heard about my channel. After I got doxxed, she heard about that. She looked into my channel, and she contacted me, and she said, "Look, if you want a white ethno state, why don't you just move to Sweden?" Because in her mind, she's got this now antiquated notion of Sweden as a white ethno state.
Blonde-tailed, blue-eyed Vikings.
Exactly. So she doesn't, and this is what I think a lot of people are like, they're just utterly ignorant of what's happening everywhere, all these other countries, but even in their own country as well.
It's similar to the comment you made about the change in Paris. People still have this romantic view of Paris where I'll take my girlfriend to Paris in this romantic city where we'll propose at the Eiffel Tower, and you go there and it's just a shithole. What am I doing here? Yeah. But they've still got that picture of what used to be. I've actually got friends of friends or friends of family that have worked in London for years and then they've come back to Scotland, say kind of smaller towns, outskirts of Glasgow, and they've even commented going, it's very white here, because they've been so used to being the minority in an area.
And they probably have, you know, some of them might be relieved about it, like, it's very white here.
But they won't. I think it's I think they have a similar experience that you and I had, but they're fighting it.
Yeah, they're feeling guilty about it. They're thinking it's kind of unhealthy. And this is what
Why am I noticing?
This is one of the most disgusting aspects of it all, that I think kids are now being taught to believe that if a place is all white, it's that's icky, you know, it's nasty, it's unpleasant. If there's not diversity, if there's not some spice in the soup, then it's just it's gruel, it's bland, and it's almost certainly racist. So the only it has to be diverse.
I know this is something we can't get into now because of the time, but just on that point, this is a theory that I've got, which I'm interested in your opinion. Not only do we have the LGBT pro-trans education and pro-trans guidance in Scotland, not in all schools, but a lot of schools are adopting this, but they're also running a thing called anti-racist education, where kids can't tell you the history of Scotland, but they can tell you the first black player for Scotland Football Club. You know what I mean? So, but there's all of this kind of colonial guilt and all that's pushed. But my theory, I think that, see if you've got these two things running simultaneously. You've got the gay the tranny education paired with the white guilt education. In my opinion, I think a lot of kids are going to go, what do I want to be? A horrible racist oppressor or a tranny victim group? And I think that's going to push more children towards transgenderism that would never have even entertained it before because of how they're kind of structured in education.
And simply because the kid wants to be special. I mean, it'll be like the vanilla option is to be white. So thank God that an area has diversity so that it has at least some character. And similarly, the vanilla option is to be heterosexual, cisgender. And that's boring because everyone's heterosexual, cisgender. You know, most people are. So I want to be something different. I want to be unique. And so I'll just choose from this menu of fucking ridiculous options, the gender fluid, non-binary. I've no idea what the rest of them are now. There must be a huge range of them, an incredible range of gender identities that you could choose from. And that makes you an individual. It makes you interesting. It makes you special.
And it also goes back to that David versus Goliath.
And it also absolves you of, as you say, the oppressor thing. Sorry to interrupt.
No, no, not at all. I kind of butted in there, but it was just you mentioned something. And it just goes back to that David versus Goliath thing we mentioned at the start. Is what would you prefer to be, the horrible Goliath or the brave David that cuts their cock off?
And then that in turn feeds back to the persecution complex that the Scots have anyway, that's been ingrained into them, about would you rather be the Scottish underdog fighting for independence, or would you rather be the English oppressor? So it's all quite consistent in that sense. But the end result of it is going to be just chaos.
There'll be a lot more kilts being weird, we'll say that.
Indeed. Well, this has been a really good conversation. So I'm glad we did this. Hold on a second. I'll just see if there are any super chats. Oh, there are. Excellent. Hold on a second. I always feel a bit bad if a guest doesn't get any super chats. You know says, another top guest, MW, Merry Christmas to all. Thank you. Pure Nomad says, having banter with these new Scottish is boring compared with true Scots. I can imagine. Both of you guys, no chance in woes. Well done to both of you guys. We'll sort our issues out when we get... Thank you, Pure Nomad. I'm not going to read the rest of that out on air, but thank you for the encouraging words. Darby, similar thing is happening in Canada with regard to opening up voting to 16-year-olds. There's a private members bill to explore the possibility of doing it. Yeah, we didn't really go into why they want 16-year-olds voting, or indeed 3-year-olds voting. And it's, let's be honest, it's because young people are naive, idealistic,
malleable,
and stupid, and also because they're malleable, and also because they are being shaped by the education system, which you went into. So that's why they want you voting before you're old enough to actually know, well, to have any bloody sense.
Yeah, because I assume in Canada they're doing the same thing here, where these things are working in tandem, like simultaneously, where they're shaping the education to create a generation of voters and then giving the younger people the vote. It's just, it'll be either keeping power or gaining power. It's they've done it for years.
Yeah, indeed. Darby also says, simultaneously, there's a bill entering the first reading to set up what they're calling a kids' helpline. But in reality, it's so that kids can report their parents for breaking the hate speech laws. Fuck! I mean, again, it's 1984, where you've got to be wary of your own kids, because they'll report you.
On that, we've got the same thing in Scotland. So say you've got all this anti-racist education, the pro-tranny stuff again, but you've got the hate crime law that's gone live in 2024. See if your child overhears you saying an opinion that's not, that they've been taught this bad, they could report you. They could get you in a lot of kind of legal trouble. And not only can they kick your door in if you're stirring up hatred in your own home, they can also seize all your devices.
Yeah. Yeah. And that really screws people up. I mean, it's a disturbing thing to happen.
Yeah, because Count Dankula mentioned when this was initially spoke about in 2020, is they're making memes illegal, which when you look at the bill, it's not just verbal. It's if you get videos on your phone, audio on your phone, images. So like, you could have a meme that they deem as insulting, and then that's you in trouble.
Yeah, private property. Things you've got and said on your own private dwelling. I mean, it's amazing. It really is.
And it doesn't even need to be said.
The idea that your home is your castle is just being dissolved.
No, it's and you don't even need to send it. So they could have a report that you've maybe said something that could be perceived as insulting or stirring up hatred, and then they seize your device. They could find something that could then incriminate you. You know, it's
yeah. Aunt Sally's just said, imagine being a little shit of a child and having that power over your parents. Absolutely. It could be that the parent has pissed off the child for whatever reason, and there's a whole plethora of reasons, and the child decides, you know what, I'm going to turn things upside down here because you've not given me that toy I wanted. And of course, they wouldn't realize the scope of what they were doing.
Yeah, because they'll do something and regret it pretty quickly when they realise the true consequences of what they've done.
Yeah, yeah. But by that time, the state's got what it wanted. This is absolutely disgusting. I mean, I really hope that people organise against this. I really hope they do. Because there needs to be that really is the crux of the matter. This is happening because of heavy organization, people concentrating their resources, their activities to make this kind of thing happen. And it's only going to be resisted by a similar force. Anyway, Lady of Shalott says, the transitioning of children is very often driven by a parent, nearly always the mother, who has Munchausen's by proxy. I have seen this in action when I worked in education. The mother uses the child to access attention and approval on social media. Utter child abuse. Of course, we've seen this with celebrities. I mean, I don't know how many of these bloody Hollywood actresses have a child who just happens to be transgender. It's absurd.
You also see it a lot with like mums that have got, say, all boys, and then they've got that one kid. The sick girl. It's the princess they always wanted. And you're like, this is again a selfish action that you've imposed on them.
The mini me.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can't have one, I'll create one.
This is so unhealthy. I mean, it used to be that if a mother was in that position, it would just be, well, I'll just deal with it. It would have been nice to have a daughter, but so what? I've got lovely sons instead. Yeah. But
now I'm hoping they'll look at this like lobotomies back in the day. They'll go, what the fuck were they doing? Why was this entertained?
Yeah, I agree. I think one day this is going to be looked back on as an age of incredible insanity. I mean, yeah, indeed, we have this. We're now outraged by the idea of lobotomies. And it is, it is a very disturbing thing to do to someone. And it's right that we are shocked by it now. But what the hell? How is this any better? Diabolical. All right, and okay, Stephen asks, why did you change your name from Nay Chance to No Chance? Are you posh now that you have a YouTube channel?
it was never Nay Chance. I did have one of my many Twitter accounts as just Nay Chance, like BTW, like, by the way, because all other things were taken, I'd used them before. And then that get banned, but every account is reinstated, so I'm not evading a ban, but I've just had to constantly restart. So the only time I was Nay Chance was when I had to try and think of a Twitter handle that I'd maybe used all the other four that we said, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but it was always No Chance on YouTube.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember you had an account after the fact that was called Nay Chance. All right, and then Stephen also asks, how do you think all this ends? The next 50 years will be very bad, but what if the next 50? I think a collapse like Roman Empire and then hopefully a rebirth. Well, yeah, I would say so. I think it actually relies on the demographics. I think the trans stuff, the gay stuff, could easily be undone if the right people were in charge, easily, overnight. But the demographics is a much, much harder thing to fix. Do you want to say something on that?
Well, I think my strategy, not just in Scotland, I think this would work globally because it's not just getting pushed in Scotland or the UK, is my ideal is get the mums angry. If this stuff's getting brought in via the state into education, talk to the mums at the gate about it. See, as soon as you get mums angry, things will start changing. And they'll protect their cubs. You will get the odd lunatic that is the Munchausen's by proxy, but the majority of people don't want this forced down their children's throats. They want to make sure their kids are raised to their own standard, not what the state's current pet project is.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, we've only got 10 minutes until the next guest is due, and that's Red Ice, so I should wrap this one up. But it's been such an interesting... I mean, we could have gone on for hours, I think. There's so much that could be discussed and talked about. So thank you for such an interesting stream.
No, thanks for inviting me on and all of seeing a close. As I've watched Millennial for years, you always have a great lineup, I guess, and I appreciate being one of them. And I'm pretty quiet on YouTube at the moment. It will probably get busier in the new year. I've just had a lot going on, but I'm more active on Twitter. So if you're interested, just I think it's, what is my Twitter? Jesus. It's Mr. N Chance is where it is.
Yeah, it's linked in the description for people.
Cheers, boys.
All right. Well, okay, I'll be back in 10 minutes. In the meantime, no chance. Thank you for appearing on Millennial 2023. All right. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Sometimes the old ways are the best. To send Millennial Woes some special Yuletide cheer by post, you can use the P.O. Box. Address on screen now.
All aboard.
Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.